When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a good point. The 10th win means a lot to them. Dungy, though, going backwards, somehow got the pass completed. And across midfield, here comes the orange. Still going, Moneal. What a play! Inside the five.
Remember the good old days when after that play, Syracuse won a bowl game to go 10-3, and we all thought giving Dino Babers an extension and a massive buyout was a good idea. Welcome to the Disloyal Idiots podcast, where not 5 years later, that has turned out to be an awful idea, and Syracuse has fired Dino Babers with immediate effect. I'm Christian Guzman, joined, not as always, but this week by Andy Pregler and our special guests and friends, Mike Ostrowski and Dominic Chapone. Gentlemen, yeah, interesting day to wake up to, huh?
Yeah, that was, now keep in mind, I was up late watching the game last night, so I was barely up for like maybe a half hour when the news broke, and it, to say it came out of nowhere is a vast understatement.
I'm surprised Andy is actually also here with us, mainly because we were watching the game on TV. Andy had to witness the game person live, and probably suffered numerous mental breakdowns at the same time.
There's a photo. I'll post it in the News Magician Slack.
I've seen the photo. It's glorious.
I was going to say, Christian, when you asked me to join the pod, I thought it was more because Andy couldn't make it. Andy gets his heavy.
That was originally going to be the thing if the amount of beverages that Andy consumed last night was at a level where it would make it hard for him to move this morning. Which was a very real possibility last night.
Yeah, I think that the biggest challenge issue that I had during that game was not necessarily my level of beverages consumed. It was more just that I was in a box with a bunch of Georgia Tech fans, and there were many questions asked to me, such as, why doesn't Garrett Schrader throw the ball? Why isn't Garrett Schrader in the game? Why is the number 86 or a number 88 taking snaps at quarterback? Why is your running back taking more snaps than the guy who started the game taking snaps? And it just made me realize, it's like that moment where you've been so inside of something that when you get pulled out of it, you realize, oh my gosh, this is not the way things are supposed to work. That is literally where my brain went during this game, like having these fans that grew up with the triple option go, what you guys are doing is absolutely batshit crazy. This is a bad idea. And then they were going crazy because Georgia Tech almost gave them back the game, which I think is why it's really interesting that this decision was made when it was made, because that game was super frustrating on pretty much every level. And it almost would have been better if it was a blowout. Like the fact that they clawed back into it made the loss that much worse.
And I think I put this in the in our noon Slack. That game was basically a microcosm of Dino Babers' entire career with the Syracuse Orange. And that, you know, there is quality in this team. And somehow, some way, they'll find a way to eke out that quality and show it. However, there are other mitigating factors that prevent them from ever realizing their full potential. And a lot of it also just goes back to the head coach. And you start last night with Syracuse probably wins that game if it commits half the penalties that it does.
To interject real quick, if you think about this philosophically, this also is a reminder of the Babers era ever since he signed that contract in 2018, which is just so much a glimmer of hope, and in that comes just total despair, because it is serious. I feel like the issues that a lot of people brought up in the Slack channel with the penalties, with just costly mistakes, The failure to execute kind of late.
57-yard field goal.
Another again. Special teams mistake yet again. These are all things we've been talking about, what it feels like, for like years now.
And I know Mike and Dom, you guys are quote-unquote new to Syracuse, but Andy and I have been here throughout the entire Dino era, and it's just it's really unfortunate to see that problems that we saw last night were also problems that we saw at the beginning of Dino Babers' tenure as the Syracuse head coach. And that just, for some reason, were never fixed. We're talking about massive penalties, coaching decisions that seemed to get less and less aggressive as he grew into the job, the lack of depth, bringing in players when others got inevitably went down. All of those just kind of culminated into what we saw last night and the eventual decision this morning to fire Dino Babers.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things about this timing is that it's really obvious that a bowl game wasn't going to just save Dino. So we were in a situation where it appeared after the BC game and after the VTech game that you could have pulled the trigger at any point there. And I think this is going to be one of the more interesting pieces of journalism that we're going to have to do some digging on, or, you know, more likely someone on Syracuse.com is going to do some digging for this. We saw at Texas A&M, the reason that Jimbo Fisher was fired when he was fired was because of the meeting schedule of the boosters that controlled the purse strings to allow a giant buyout of that nature to take place. And while we don't know Dino's exact buyout, it's been reported by several outlets to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 to 10 million. And we were under the expectation that next year was his last year. 1 year, 9 million buyout feels a bit strong for me. I personally speculate that there might be another year at play, or there were options that needed to get bought out as part of it. And that was like part of the original mega extension that he signed. Like, it was a layer of protection for Dino at Syracuse there. And I wonder if Wildhack was kind of in the same boat, where it was a taking time to gather up the necessary funds to pay whatever the buyout is going to be. But the part that really gets me is they waited until after the Georgia Tech game to do it. Okay. I think that watching that game, you can justify the firing by pretty much any means because of what, you know, you guys are saying here with how that game was just consistently what Dino has been and what his shortcomings have been on the field. Once you start factoring in the shortcomings off the field, the whole thing does appear to be in a situation where in a year with a very light cycle, and I know we're going to get into this soon, but there's not a ton of openings right now that directly compete with the pool that Syracuse is going after. And I think that is really important in this decision-making process, because the next guy is stepping into arguably the hardest job in Power Five, not just because of the challenges at Syracuse, but because of the uncertainty around the ACC and because of the uncertainty around where college football is heading in an extended playoff world. What does this all mean? No one really knows. And so you're asking someone to make a long-term commitment to Syracuse in a space where we don't know where Syracuse football is going to stand in 5 to 7 years. And I do think that that matters in this coaching search discussion as we talk about names that run the gamut from 38 years old, never had a head coaching job before, to 65 years old and still looking for that first big job. I think all of those factors really do come into play. You can spin them however you want to spin them, but in the end of the day, like, this is probably the most challenging situation available on the marketplace, you know, this season.
And I think before we get into all of those on why this job is hard and the reason why potential candidates that have been reportedly floated out there would or would not take this job, I think that it's good to at least still take a further look into why Dino Babers never got back to the heights of that 10-3 season. Because there was a reason why he got that extension. It's because you know, Syracuse hasn't had a season like that 2018 season since the Pascalone era. And especially since after the good feel of that year, you know, it felt like the program was going in the right direction. But the problems that we already brought up just weren't enough to overcome in terms of the lack of depth in certain key positions. And then, you know, the lack of composure in terms of on the field level headedness as well. So,
yeah, I think.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, Mike.
Feel free to jump in whenever you guys want to. I'm gonna toss out ideas there, and if you guys want to comment on it, go ahead.
I guess going back to the discipline thing, it feels like that's really still been the biggest issue. You can make arguments about the recruiting, the challenges that Dino faced, and there are very legitimate challenges that he faced getting people coming to Syracuse. I think he actually did a pretty decent job getting guys in the portal this last year compared to years before. But it doesn't really matter if you can't coach them and get them to be disciplined. And above all else, those stupid penalties, and it's not just the it's not even just the false starts. It's the unnecessary, like, the late hits, the unnecessary roughness, all that kind of stuff that has doomed SU for years. That the dumb mistakes, the heat of the moment mistakes, is why they've lost a lot of games close. And then at the end of the year, it feels like, man, we really should have been a lot better than we were. Not because the team itself is necessarily great at any point, but just because those penalties are the ones that you remember. Because you think, well, if this didn't happen, then B, C, and D also don't happen, and we win. That may not be the best train of thought all the time, but that seems to be what the general consensus with the fan base is right now, is that above anything else, that's why people wanted Dino gone. And whoever comes in next, I think that's got to be priority number one, is just run a much tighter ship than Dino did.
Mike, you and I talked about it a lot, especially. It's our positions are interesting because Christian and Andy, you guys talked about being there since the beginning. Mike and I kind of had it on campus since the middle to the end here, where you come into the weird COVID year where we win one game, and then you kind of see a little bit of progress with the next year in 21. They go 5-7. And then we get these last 2 years, which was just the biggest roller coaster. The 6-0 start, best start since 87, the fall from grace after Clemson, another good start this year, only for Babers to be gone, you know, not even through the after the season. So I think that's one point that I think is important. I think the other thing too is that I know Kevin's brought up this point a lot. I know guys here have brought this up a lot, is that Babers is definitely a microcosm itself of what's been wrong with Syracuse football. But we also know that there's going to be structural changes that will have to happen with treatment of NIL, replacing guys in recruitment. I think a common theme that's happened the last few years, this is just a very broad point, is that we've seen massive underchanges with women's basketball, men's basketball, and potentially in the next little bit here with the new coach, men's with football. Just not only about changes with the head of the program, I think with the direction of the program relative to catching up to the broader NCAA landscape. I think that's something the moment Babers was fired, I think that points out to me more than anything.
And I think when he was initially hired, there was definitely the sense of Dino was bringing a more modern style to Syracuse, because, you know, the only thing we really knew about Dino Babers when he was hired was, oh, he is from the Baylor system from the early 2010s that ran amok with RG3 at the wheel. And so it was always known as, you know, the mantra orange is the new fast was the first thing that we knew about Dino Babers. It was going to be no huddle, spread offense, are going to push the tempo and, you know, basically outwork opponents. And at least in the quote-unquote honeymoon years, that was an attractive style of football. And you saw it when Amba Edetabo and Steve Ishmael put up those big, big receiving numbers that, okay, the wins might not be here, but at least it's a modern style of football that's catching to the eye and should, in theory, allow Syracuse to attract recruits just based on the premise of this is an exciting brand of football that will get you to the next level. However, it just doesn't seem like, it just seems like as even, you know, football has quickly evolved from when Dino was hired to where it is now. It just doesn't feel like he's adjusted in the same way to keep up an attractive style of football to attract the same type of recruits that maybe he initially would have at the beginning of his tenure.
Just so we don't also lose the point real quick, Andy, I love the, whenever there's like a coaching change, the fascinating thing I always look at is like the why of it and the when. And I remember I did a story, it was after the BC loss, so they were still, we haven't seen the Virginia Tech loss yet, hadn't seen the Pitt win, and obviously last night. But Wildhack was super vague, obviously, on the whole terms of like, what would happen if Babers was this record? He didn't answer any speculative questions, but he said November was the important month. The goal was the bowl game. Babers getting canned before Syracuse still has one more chance to get the bowl game, I think it was fascinating. And obviously, again, we don't know the necessarily behind the scenes aspect of that, but it's obviously a message maybe to, whether it's to the fan base, whether it's to the alumni, whether it's just the broader community, just the him not being let go at the end of the season and him being let go in the manner that it happened like this weekend, I think is just super, super interesting to watch for.
I do at least think that, obviously we haven't been told this officially, but I want to think that they more or less told him like, yeah, Dino, you're going to be gone at the end of the year. Do you want to coach this last game at home? Or
that's probably what happened, yeah.
I mean, Andy, Christian, you're the vets here. What do you guys think about that? Was there maybe a Schaefer situation again, or do they just did he just?
I mean, the Schaefer situation
kicked out.
I mean, the Schaefer situation was entirely different for reasons that I can share off air, but I can't share on air. That I am more than happy to dive into. But for this situation, I do think. So when the weird thing about being at a game in person, especially when you're in like the suite level of a stadium, is that there's a lot of people in suits running around and walking around, very importantly. And I'm very lucky that in my time period doing this, I've made a lot of friends with those types of people. And so when I go to a game in person, I get a lot more scuttlebutt and weird information that I don't normally get via text or whatnot. And I was able to chat with some people that I hadn't chatted with in a while. And they did say to me, multiple people told me, Wildhack was at the game. He was not socializing. He was not fundraising. He was watching the game because they brought down other people whose job was to fundraise, was to do some of the recruiting stuff that normally happens on road trips to these major cities like Atlanta. Like, I think something that we forgot about that I got reminded of was that when the ACC scheduling model got changed, Dino was one of the largest criticizers of it because he realized that Syracuse would only be in Atlanta once every 4 to 8 years. And for him and his staff, that was a huge miss in terms of recruiting because they wanted to hit the Atlanta and North Florida areas pretty aggressively. And those games against Florida State, Georgia Tech, Miami gave them opportunities to get into these areas. So that the fact that Wildhack was very obviously clued into the game makes me think that he already had the okay and the buy-in from the football alumni to make the decision one way or the other. Because if the alumni association really did feel strongly one way or the other, and the boosters felt really strongly one way or the other, a decision would have been made already. But what this tells me is that the boosters and the alumni who matter trust Wildhack's decision-making. And Wildhack saw something in this game that put him over the edge to say, you know what, it's time to move on. The obvious answer is like the discipline, the fact that this game really didn't feel any different than a lot of other Syracuse games under Dino, especially on the road. But I do think like one of the things that blew me away was the handling of the last 5 minutes of that game. Like, you get into a position where you somehow can make this a one score game. And he was right to go for the 2-point conversion when he did. Like, you don't know if you're going to get it again. Like, you know, don't kick the extra point and then put a do or die situation. Like, I liked the decision a lot that he made by going for two. But the play call was just remarkably terrible with a team when everybody knew exactly what play you were going to run. And so now you're down two scores and you somehow get the ball back with an opportunity to maybe get a Hail Mary, maybe get a miracle of some kind. And the end result is to put it in the hands of an unproven, untested quarterback because you can't throw the ball with anybody else. Like, the decision-making that goes into that, the decision, the amount of stuff you're giving away in scouting to say, like, look, we needed to move the ball down the field quickly, and we couldn't, so we had to put in a quarterback who has no business playing in this game. And the reason he has no business playing in this game is because of the decision that he made on that play. Like, it to me, that is just such mismanagement, not just of the game, but of everything that leads up to a game. Like, you only get 40 hours a week with these kids. You only get so much time when you can, you know, effectively teach and communicate with these kids what is supposed to happen. And I think what you see in situations like this is you find out the coaches that can do more than just call X's and O's. You find out which coaches can do a lot more than just shake the hands of the right donors and say the right quotes on his radio show. Like, I think Dino came into Syracuse with a blueprint of how to fix Syracuse, and it worked. And then midway through his tenure, the entire sport fundamentally changed with the transfer portal and NIL, and Dino could not adjust on the fly. And it's really unfair, but it happened. We've seen a lot of coaches struggle and have to look for other jobs, but we've also seen a lot of coaches like Nick Saban prove why they get paid what they get paid, because they adjusted very quickly and they didn't miss a beat because they had that infrastructure. They had that process in place to say that, look, while the outcome or an input might change here or there, we still know what we need to do in those 40 hours a week with these student athletes to have the best outcome to have the best possible outcome. And for me, I think that's like part of this hiring cycle for me is going to be to see if Syracuse prioritizes that kind of thinking, or do they prioritize name recognition because this program seems so apathetic? Do they prioritize young hotshot coordinator because they want to play a certain type of way? Like, I don't know any of these things, but I think, like, Dom, what you're kind of saying here is, like, we're going to find out so much about Wild Hack and what kind of things are important to him based off of how this hiring process goes through and what names get associated with them. Because, like, last thing I'll say before I shut up is that, like, I was going through old 2015 Syracuse.com articles about Dino's hiring today and got reminded that Syracuse wanted Scott Frost. That was the guy that they wanted above everybody else.
I remember, yeah.
And he picked UCF. So then we offered the job to Chris Ash, who said no and went to Rutgers and went 8-33. Like,
yeah, thank God for that. God. As I was reading.
And the dramatic irony of Circle, the same guys taking over the interim tag for both Chris Ash and Dino Babers. Yeah.
That's what it's getting at. I was looking up, like, how did he get the interim? And, oh, yeah, this guy was really, really bad in New Jersey. And
yeah.
And it led to a coach getting fired four games into the year, which, Jesus, he must have that.
I mean, Chris Ash was so amazing.
You mentioned in our Slack, Christian, he has trademarked it. We are now officially New Jersey's college team.
Oh. I don't know why they come on you irons, but let's go.
No, they, but this is the thing, like, that was, I think that move also says a lot because you have Rocky Long just chilling there on the sideline, who's been a head coach longer than everybody else on staff has been coaching, and they still made the decision that they did. And I think to me, that signifies, like, look, this guy's role as the New Jersey recruiter is really important to us. Like, what this guy has done in the short time that he's been at Syracuse is really important to us. Like, that was made clear with, like, Tony White's elevation to associate head coach before he left. Under Wild Hack, they've been very clear on signaling what coaches matter and go above and beyond outside the head coaching circles. And I think that it does kind of shed a light on that we're probably looking at a head coach with either Northeast ties, with Syracuse ties, or with some sort of proven player acquisition pipeline that can be easily transported over to Syracuse from wherever the coach is currently at. And I do think that this is, like, again, it's really funny because this process is not going to be linear in any way, shape, or form. The last time, I would argue that Syracuse probably made the right choice when choosing between Scott Frost, Chris Ash, and Dino Babers. That was also the year that Bracco Mendenhall got hired, who's now a name that's been floated for this job. Like, that 2015 cycle was insane. And when you look at the guys that actually hit and were the right choice at the, like, at the time, they were all the unsexy names or they were the out of left field names. And I think that that's, like, a good reminder as we go into this process that, like, just because Syracuse isn't talking to the person we think they should be, isn't necessarily a bad thing if they're looking at the right things to fix what Dino couldn't fix.
To kind of bounce off that real quick, just looking at, like, again, I'm looking at things from, like, me being predominantly a basketball fan, but obviously still, like, having a keen interest with football. But if you look at with Syracuse, the last two hires with Leggett Jack with the women's team and then Autry with the men's team, the two common themes with those coaches were culture setter and knew what they were doing in the modern NCAA. And I think I'm guessing if you're Wild Hack, if I had to make the very way too early prediction, I would hope that, like, we all agree, I think, to not just go for a big name, because big names will not necessarily equal great program.
So everyone in the comments, stop saying Jimbo Fisher, yes, Urban Meyer, Ed Orgeron. No,
we've seen this. We've seen this plan and worked horribly.
Was in there. Dan Quinn was in there.
No.
As
no,
always,
no, my, no my New boy, England Matt coordinators for coaches either. None of them, please.
Yeah, so, like, but I think we agree, like, that's the arc, like, as Andy's saying, it's the archetype of coach we're looking for, I think, is somebody who can set the tone early, who I also think is just adaptive of what this modern college football landscape looks like, which is that you have to recruit heavy in areas. We saw, again, with both coaches, their specializations with DMV or with the Washington DMV area with Autry or with past players, Leggett Jack. I think that's the sort of relationship that Syracuse football as a brand, I think, has got to start fixing. Equally as much as kind of beyond the field issues with the penalties and with the shortcomings and the mistakes at the end of games.
So two things.
We don't use that word here. Brand. We don't
hashtag
use brand. That word.
Hashtag brand. speaking of the guy who coined the term hashtag brand, it's not the guy I'm about to mention, but Dom and Mike, do you know the name Mark Coyle?
More or less.
I'm flat out a no. I got to be honest here.
Mark Coyle was the Syracuse AD for 1 year before he went to Minnesota, which was his dream job, before initially saying that Syracuse was his dream job. But besides that, Mark Coyle was the one who hired Dino Babers, not Wildcat. So this is going to be the first time, and hopefully the only time, that Wildcat is hiring a football coach. And like Dom said, right now, in terms of the five dome sports, let's put it that way, every single person in the five dome sports has been a Syracuse alum, like Dom said, with an interest, with a tie to set culture to the modern game. And we're not just talking about basketball. Dom, you mentioned it also with lacrosse, in our Slack channel with lacrosse, Gary Gain and Kayla Trainer. You know, those two programs are basically Northeast baseball to, in terms of what, you know, baseball is to the Southeast Conference. Like, Trainer and Gate were, you know, big names, but definitely had the allure of making Syracuse a bit more modern and also attracting a recruiting base. And I think that's also going to be really important, because one of the hidden factors in all of this in terms of who Syracuse is going to choose with its new head coach is that the recruiting class that's actually coming in for Syracuse this year is pretty good. it's better than what we've seen from them most years. There's a lot of high three-star recruits in terms of 24/7's star rankings. And obviously with a head coaching change, it's going to be one of the biggest things to do is to actually hang on to some of those recruits. So it would probably behoove Syracuse to choose someone who can connect with those recruits really quickly and make them and see their pitch as an attractive way to play football and to stay with Syracuse.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting because the portal is going to take away a lot of guys on this team, flat out. Like, that's what happens when there's a coaching change. And unless there's a name that's John Wildhack has already got on the short list and he's already called them and he's already worked out that this is going to happen at the end of the season or it's going to be announced sometime this week. There's just no way to run a modern college football program, fire your coach, and not lose a good chunk of both your recruiting class and your portal class. Now, the flip side of that is that you then have a very small window to win them all back because of the new signing day periods as shifting and of the transfer portal reopening. So I think that I would actually flag as a concern trying to hire someone who keeps your recruits. Because I think what you've kind of listed in all these coaches that Wildhack has hired so far, they've all been inside the building. With the exception of Legit Jack, who had been in the building earlier that year multiple times as part of her recognition as a player, Wildhack has shown that he obviously he's very comfortable hiring people that he knows really well. I think that that's why Tony White is top of mind for everybody here, because it fits the pattern that Wildhack has shown so far. Like, Tony White was in the building for 3 years here. They probably still have each other's agents' phone numbers. There's probably already been contact there, to be completely frank. But unless you're going to get somebody this week, unless you're going to have a press conference next week where you're going to say, like, hey, season's over, my team's off into a bowl game, but, like, I'm leaving to become head coach. At that point, I don't think it matters about trying to keep the class together, because the boat's already passed at that point. And this is, again, college football changed so drastically the last few years that this is one of those very real elements that you now have to navigate and go into the calculus of firing a head coach, which is why I think it's really interesting that Wildhack felt so strongly to make that move, even though Syracuse still had one game left where they could reach bowl eligibility.
We are Iowa fans next week. Nebraska plays Iowa next week, and Nebraska needs a win to get to bowl eligibility. So if you do want Tony White as the next Syracuse head coach, you should root for Iowa next week and its defense to basically take care of Nebraska so that Syracuse can talk to Tony White in a very quick fashion.
Yeah. If I could convince hey, listen, can I just throw a Steelers jersey on and pretend like it's the same colors?
Same offense, too.
It is.
But, Andy, anyway. that wasn't a point I was going to bring up kind of on that front. I think the other thing, I forget who brought it up in our Slack channel, but it was basically at this, I think it was actually Kevin, the decision of basically it sounded like it was either extend him or fire him. It sounded like lame duck option for the most part was off the table. I think what we were rolling to right now is the significance of this hire happening now, because we mentioned the changes in college football and specifically with Syracuse's case, and that's only going to get crazier with the new schedule format with the ACC, continuous use of the transfer portal. These factors are going to matter moving forward. And I think that they're basically trying to find that next leader to kind of maneuver that.
Yeah. Also, not to continually beat a dead horse here, but I found Athlon's grades for the 2015 coaching cycle. Syracuse was given the an A plus for hiring Dino. The other A plus is Matt Campbell at Iowa State, which
that checks out.
Yep, Willie Fritz at Tulane. Yep.
Yeah.
Mark Richt at Miami. LOL. Justin Fuente. Justin Fuente Virginia Tech.
Nope.
And the coaches rank the coach hirings that were ranked below Dino Babers include Jason Candle at Toledo. It also includes one more small school, but the one that stands out to me is that they rated Dino Babers as a better hire than Kirby Smart at Georgia. So, you know, this whole thing, none of it matters. It's all made up. We're going to try to judge it in the moment, but we're going to be wrong. We are going to be remarkably wrong about however we grade this hire.
This
all right. just because.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Andy, just because he said Georgia, I do gotta have to get one word in here. I went and looked at the recruiting class for next year. If you notice that the top two recruits, Jamie Tremble, the four-star tight end, and Ja'Kari Williams, the borderline four-star QB prospect, he's a high 3-4 on one of the sites, are both Georgia guys.
And so Tremble's high school is 20 minutes away from Bobby Dodd. And Williams' high school is about an hour away from Atlanta.
So that makes me think about the timing of: are we selling our top two recruits that we are serious about still competing next year, and they are not going to like if we keep going with whatever this is? That kind of just popped up spontaneously, but. Any thoughts on that?
I think it's valid. Like, there was multiple SU staffers that I saw walking. Like, the way Georgia Tech's campus is set up is actually kind of fun. It's like right in the heart of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Very, very walkable. And so you tailgate pretty much right on campus near the stadium, with the one road that kind of leads in and out. The other road is right next to the stadium and is very heavily controlled. They do a block party there. So, there were multiple Syracuse groups walking by with admin staff that I recognized from my old jobs, and lots of what looked to be parents of program members or parents, you know, of a certain age group that would align with the players on the field. My assumption is that this was a game that was both a alumni fundraising stopping opportunity and a family/recruit visiting weekend kind of vibe. So that all would track really well if it's like, I think, again, something that's gone wrong this year is that Syracuse has looked bad in every showcase game that it has had. Like, the Virginia Tech game went not according to script. This game, primetime on ACC Network, real bad. We don't need to talk about the three big games that we had back-to-back-to-back weeks. Those went very, very bad. But we knew those were going to go very bad. But they went very, very, very bad.
Purdue is punching the air right now and not being a prime-time game.
I mean, that's the crazy part, is that we started the year with that Purdue game. And even then, there were people that were coming away from that Purdue game going, I don't think Syracuse looks very good.
Well, then again, that's what Purdue gets for playing Big Ten Saturday night instead of the ACC Network and its ESPN partner, whatever.
That's why
NBC has Syracuse influence right now on the Big Ten because of Noah Eagle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Steve. If you can tell, this is just lots of fun. We've had some Pasqualoni references. We brought up the ghosts of the 2015. Coaching hiring cycle, which is always fun. But you know what we haven't brought up? Our partner Home Field Apparel. Guys, they are in the middle of a giant Black Friday sale. Use promo code BF20 for 20% off your entire order of t-shirts, caps, fleece on the site. It's a big weekend for home field. Definitely get those holiday shopping orders in. And if you would like an additional 10% off your order and you've yet to purchase anything from Home Field Apparel, use promo code NUNES23, N-U-N-E-S-2-3, for 10% off your first order and get one of those sick bomber jackets that Christian's showing. I'm wearing my very retro brand Home Field sweater. I've got the Cuse hat on. I was decked out in Home Field head to toe this weekend. Might have convinced somebody to buy the Georgia Tech bomber jacket. Connor, I'm expecting my check to be in the mail tomorrow.
I'm currently wearing black in mourning instead of any home field. So,
hey, the Bills won today. Be happy.
Yeah, sure.
You'll look better than you did on week one.
Yeah, yeah. Baby steps, I guess.
Baby steps. Baby step things that we should probably start inching into this conversation with. There are a lot of names out there for this job. There's too many names out there for this job. I am intrigued at if anybody here has any strong opinions about any of the names that aren't Sean Lewis or Tony White, because I think that those are the obvious two names that are like, those are the two on every single person's list, which means that those are the two that are definitively getting calls or have already received calls from Syracuse in regards to this job. It's everybody else that I'm intrigued about, considering that there's a lot of different directions that they can go in this hire.
Get it out of the way quick. We don't need round two of Doug Marrone. I'm sorry.
Let's move on. To be fair, that is a better idea than some of the stupid shit we've seen tossed around. It is not a good idea, and we should not do it, but it's a better idea than some of the shit that's been flying around.
All right. And then
I don't know why Kevin has Nathaniel. I guess. I don't know why Kevin has Nathaniel Hackett on his list. I will be speaking to him about that and to the media HR staff about that.
Yes, Steve, you missed it, but we have already verbally agreed. No big names. Ideally, if possible, at least like more experienced big names, shall we say.
You know, here's actually who they might actually go for. If we're going along the trends of maybe not Syracuse ties, but at least local ties to the region, and Andy and Steve probably can already tell where I'm going to go with this based on what I said, they might seriously consider Mike Hart.
That was one that I thought was going to be interesting, considering the Michigan stuff and how it breaks. Like, I don't know that we're sure that the assistant coaches weren't a bigger role in that scandal than Harbaugh. And I don't know, like, look, I think if you offer the job to Hart, he'd take the job in a heartbeat, no pun intended. But I think there's some real concern reaching out to someone like him in this spot. But I am waiting for the mountains of Syracuse fans / adjacent alumni to the program who start throwing out names like that, because we were talking about this before the show. So Steve, you haven't heard this yet, but Bruce Feldman over on The Athletic, head college football writer, put out his list of names that people are talking about for the job. Mm-hmm. And that list includes some long shot guys, as he calls them, which are Syracuse tied football community guys. Eagles offensive line coach Jeff Stoutland.
Okay. Where's his
and Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo. So Stoutland played at Syracuse and he began his coaching career at Syracuse under Pasqualoni. And Anarumo similarly began his coaching career in the early 90s at Syracuse.
Lou Amoruto would be the biggest heist of the fucking century. Just mainly because, yes, his job next year is not going to be Bengals DC. It's going to be a head coach, but it's going to be the first head coach hired in the NFL recruiting cycle. If Syracuse somehow pulls that off, it is the biggest heist of the fucking century.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. When you said local ties, I thought you were talking about Matt Patricia.
we X'd that out right away because I'm immediately going, no New England coaches.
I was
going
to say, because he grew up down the road, like 40 minutes away. He grew up.
I get it.
He went to the
New England coaches.
Yes, Steve, you weren't here for the conversation of we don't need the genius that makes people practice outdoors when they play in a dome. Ask the Lions about that.
Fair.
And the Bill O'Brien getting on every list concerns me. Or me too. It's also and Bill O'Brien's agent. On every list.
Don't forget Urban Meyer. He still finds a way.
Coach O. I think Coach O showed up on most things. Like what?
I have seen him at least 3 or 4 times in the article I put out this morning.
I nearly vomited when Pete Thamel mentioned it, how Golden was a consideration.
Yep. Yeah, you know what? Let's pay. Jimbo might come and coach for free because he's making $7.5 million a year on his buyout.
Let's all take a step back and just for everyone listening and watching, just take a step back and realize what we've mainly said are names that Syracuse should not go after.
Right. This is all mocking those names.
Yeah.
Like, so great people, I'm sure. However, should not be anywhere near this.
So if you have a suggestion, think carefully, because there are a lot of reasons why Syracuse shouldn't go after a lot of the big hire names.
Yeah, I actually kind of wrote about this today on my Substack while I was sitting in the Atlanta airport. The biggest issue that I have is that all of these names that you're talking about were good head coaches in the pre-NIL transfer portal world.
You're
essentially looking at these guys and you're going, well, you were good once, and why should the reason that you were good then translate now when culture bowl is fundamentally different? And if you're going with that level of unproven commodity where you're essentially looking for some sort of proof of concept plan from these guys, just go with the hotshot coordinator then. Because financially, if you hire, like, let's say, for example, Sean Lewis does decide to change his mind and take the Syracuse job. There's been reporting out there by Stephen Godfrey and Richard Johnson that Sean Lewis has zero interest in the Syracuse job. Let's assume that he takes the job and he, in 4 years, turns Syracuse around to where they're going 8-4 pretty consistently. At that point, Syracuse has given him an extension. And if another team, say from the Big Ten or the SEC, wants to hire him or the NFL wants to hire him, they have to pay a buyout. And Syracuse then gets that buyout money to use on the next coach. And I think that's an
infinite cycle.
Exactly. Like that's the best case scenario here for Syracuse is you hire a young guy that gets you to where you want to go. And then him leaving gives you enough money to lock down the next guy who is going to cost more, but you now suddenly have a giant pile of cash because your hotshot young guy got up and left. And so when you go with the big name, the only reason you go with the big name is because the program's energy levels are so lethargic that you need to have someone like that to revive it. And I do think there's a valid point to be made that is where Syracuse football has been trending. I don't know if they're there, but I'm not going to say they're not there. And, you know, Steve, you being the one that actually lives in Central New York and sees this, like, I think the last few years have been influenced by basketball not being good as well, but it does seem as if the football program bottom hasn't completely fallen out in terms of fan support.
You know what sounds stupid is that those 3 games this year where the wheels fell off may have dropped the bottom out. Like not completely gone. And in all honesty, maybe that is the pulse that forced SU to make this move when it did. Because even in the local, like, my group of like 10 plus tailgaters and season ticket hold 10 plus families of tailgating and season ticket holding for the Wake game, like there was little to no interest whatsoever. Like, I think there was one or two people talking about it. So when people that have had season tickets for 10 plus years are having trouble, like, rationalizing going to a home game, something's broken somewhere. And maybe this, Syracuse has notoriously been horrible at reading the room, but maybe they accidentally read the room right on this one. If that makes any sense.
No, I think that's definitely correct. But like Andy, but to Andy's point also, I also do think that it's not time to go for a Meyer, Fisher, Ogeron name yet. It's just not that time.
No, I'm with you there.
Yeah. If they get this next hire wrong, then maybe, yeah. But I mean, going back to the just looking to where the last Syracuse head coaches came from. So Gerg was Texas co-defensive coordinator, but was also defensive coordinator with the late 90s Broncos and the early 2000 Chiefs. Then Doug Marrone was with the Saints when they were starting to get good under Sean Payton. And then Schaefer was the main guy as the defensive coordinator on Marrone's staff. So essentially it's been, coaches with a lot of pedigree. It's been coordinators, I should say, with a lot of pedigree. Now, I'm not, for the reasons we mentioned earlier in this podcast, does Wildhack continue that trend? Or does he go with the trend that he has gone with, which is person with Syracuse ties, who will inevitably change the culture to something very, very modern? That's going to be the decision where they have to go.
Ken, does that person exist that has Syracuse ties and would change the culture to something modern?
And the only person, honestly, close to that is, unfortunately, Tony White.
Yeah, that's exactly what my thought was there's kind of an option there.
Yeah. And there's a reason why this podcast title is A Boombox Outside Tony White's House.
Yeah, I saw that and it's like, okay, yeah, going full 16 candles makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now for you young kids, this is a reference to an 80s movie.
You were like 10
when that movie came out.
That doesn't mean I don't know it exists. Come on.
Actually, no, you were like negative 20. Jesus.
Steve's old.
They were pretty bad.
Damn it.
You did it to yourself. No, I but did. I think this is the interest. I think this is the interesting thing about Tony White when we look at this is that, yes, he's got a lot of good experience. He's not been a D1 head coach. And I do think that it's, we kind of talked about it earlier, like this is going to be a hard gig and Tony White does have the option to hang out with his buddy, Matt Rhule, who really seems to like him and keep him around until, another job opens up of some kind. Because if there's one thing that we've seen from Nebraska this year is that Matt Rhule has really turned around a season that was starting badly from a program that was going badly. And they might be cooking something special down there. I'm not saying that they are. It's just the signals are there for something interesting. But that only makes me want Tony White more.
I mean, this is also you who, even if we weren't firing Dino, would still want Tony White.
Yes.
I might have a blind spot. He might be named Tony White. It's fine.
And honestly, like Michigan scandal aside, that's probably why Mike Hart is probably even still an option, even with the whole Michigan scandal right now. So, like, I know he doesn't have direct Syracuse ties, but like he knows that area very well.
Who? And Hart coached here.
Yeah, that too.
And oh, yeah. Grew up here.
Yeah.
It's as direct as it gets.
Yeah.
That said, though, I think, you know, here's the stupid question. Do you worry about where their recruiting like histories are from? Just because we finally have seen a resurgence in like getting back into New Jersey and that sort of thing. Just like the, you know, looking at the Nunzio.
I don't necessarily think so, because especially in football, you have 10 10 coaches. True. Who are going to help you recruit. It's not like with basketball and lacrosse where you're limited to 4.
Right.
So you have 10 guys to spread out across the country. I mean, Dino didn't even touch New Jersey until Nunzio Campanelli joined the program.
Right.
So, like, that is something that can be solved with bringing in the right staff. And I'm not so worried about that in terms of, okay, we need to hire this guy because we need a specific region. I'm more worried about, you know, setting the right culture.
Have we discussed the dumb that is wild heck with nothing to lose if we win these two games doing something stupid and promoting Nunzio? I know it's not going to happen, but there's always that slight chance.
No, everyone gave the awkward silence, as in, yeah, like there is a theoretical world that's
going to
happen.
They're going to win. They're going to go 6-6 and make it to a bowl, and then we're going to have that awkward month of, is this actually working?
Right. And right now, did we discuss that we're all Iowa fans next week?
Yes, we have. Yes. We have discussed we are all Iowa fans next week. Shout out. That Iowa-Nebraska game is going to be a masterclass of defense.
Yeah.
Not so much offense.
Is it going to be defense
by the under,
though?
Oh, the over-under for that game should be fascinating to see.
Hammer the under.
I don't care what it is. Hammer the under.
Hammer it.
Yep. God. Yeah, that's... wow. This is such a weird-ass world we're living in right now.
If Syracuse gets bowl eligible, the bowl makers have something...
Said it's going to happen.
If Syracuse gets bowl eligible, the odds make the bowl makers have a very funny opportunity. Put Syracuse Army in the military bowl. Andy's about to run for the hills.
Don't tell me that if it shows up on the prediction I have to do tomorrow. I was like, please.
No. We're just not doing that. No.
I mean, just for the sake of they already played each other this year, is that an actual thing that, like, that bowl, whoever the bowl organizers are, probably wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah,
probably. Even though the game itself would be hysterical. Just because they've already played each other.
That would also be part of the reason why it'd be really funny.
Yeah.
I mean, if we make a bowl game, we're going to the Fenway Bowl, and we're going to play a really weird team. I forget what I
USF, saw in the last. I think was
the, what was the other one last week? Tulane always is in those projections, too. USF.
I think our past co-hosts, or our past hosts on this this year's show would implode if it was SU Tulane in the Fenway Bowl. Does Casillo have to come in for that? Is he contractually obligated if SU plays Tulane?
He has to take his family on a Christmas trip to Boston.
I'm just going to be blasting.
They're not spending Christmas in Southern California.
I'm just going to be blasting Shipping Up to Boston the entire intro every week if that's the case, and it's going to be ridiculously annoying.
And we'll have to what, like 37 seconds so that we're able to use it.
Yeah, but you all will still hear the whole thing. Like, we'll clip it so that we could use it, but like you all will still be forced to listen to it. It would be really weird to go into a situation where Syracuse is playing a bowl game, has an announced head coach, but still has a different staff coaching the team up into the bowl game. Like, if we really want, if we want to be the messy team, this is the way to do it. It would also mean that, like, this is the second time that Syracuse has gone to back-to-back bowl games, which is a rare occurrence, and yet the coach in each of those bowl games is different. Yeah, I just like want to throw that out. That'll be a thing that'll happen two times in my lifetime if they win Saturday. And yeah, I did not think that that was the kind of uncertainty Syracuse was going to bring us. But yeah, this is setting up to be a weird week because we have the Thanksgiving holiday. And like I said, I think that there's a very legitimate possibility Syracuse already has their guy. And so, like,
if it's Lou Hamel's been on top. That'd be amazing.
Like, Thamel has his guy there. Like, he was the first with this news. He's obviously connected to Syracuse. He's connected to a lot of head coaches. Like, if there is any whiff of that, of a coach being named, Thamel is going to break it, and it's going to be it'll happen as soon as he gets the news. So I'm just intrigued to see if we get an announcement of any kind this week or a report. I could go for a really good report this week
from sauces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is what happens when the integrity of the broadcast and journalism end of things is SU grads.
So I have good news. So I have good news and bad news. Then,
what's that?
So the good news. No. So good news and bad news. The good news is that Wake Forest is averaging the worst amount of yards per play in the ACC at 4.8.
Okay.
The bad news, are we the second worst?
No, the bad news is that Wake Forest has the fifth best rushing defense at an average of 4 yards per play.
Yeah, that tracks. Nothing surprises me.
So you know what that also means? We shall be hammering the under in this game as well.
Which, you know, what will actually happen is we go off for another 400 yards of run or rushing against the best defense in the league. And yeah, stupid ensues.
Well, Pitt was 11th, so.
Now, this is where Dan Villari rediscovers how to be a quarterback and throws for like 250 yards just for the heck of it.
That sounds
good. So Tommy DeVito.
Yeah.
Tommy DeVito, what you needed was an offensive line.
I still maintain we should have stuck with DeVito.
I believe there is audio evidence of me and you both saying stick with DeVito. There's a long history of our track record on this podcast.
But, I still think it's very funny. A friend reminded me this week that when Tommy DeVito was recruited to Syracuse, I proclaimed that he was going to be an NFL starting quarterback by the time all was said and done. And, that take has now come to pass. I was right. I would just like that to be known. I was right on that one specific take. Do not think about it too hard. I called that Tommy DeVito was going to be an NFL starting quarterback.
Don't dig around that time for more old takes exposed.
Tommy DeVito has more touchdown passes this year than the number two overall pick from 2 years ago.
Who was that?
One Zachariah Wilson.
Oh God!
I mean,
Mister,
doing it to yourself, mentioning that, Christian.
Yeah. I love Robert Saleh, but boy, did you guys need to get the quarterback.
Listen, I'll put you in touch with Rich for some therapy.
Please.
I mean, and Christian, this is coming from two Steelers fans after whatever happened today as well.
Kenny's broken. That's what happened.
The thing is, Kenny needs a game to be close in the fourth quarter for it to win.
It was close, and they didn't win because
I'm saying,
like, honestly, Matt Canada broken.
Yeah, a 25-year-old quarterback coming off one good season. That's the guy you want to hit your hopes and dreams to. Oh, I'm not salty or anything. This is going to be a weird, this is a weird show just because, yeah, Syracuse now has its first head coaching search underway since 2015 for a head football coach. And unlike the basketball version, we didn't get an announcement of who's going to be the guy with the announcement of firing the old guy. Always going to be, always going to appreciate how that went down, if only because there was no uncertainty in that process.
Right.
So a lot of uncertainty here.
This should actually hopefully come quick if you go by past timelines, because Babers was hired on December 5th. So
I mean, you have to now. Like if you wait, you're basically punting on 2024, which I don't think Syracuse is in a position to afford to do.
No, you can't, especially when the schedule got easier with the All Coastal Conference.
The trademark.
How have they not trademarked it yet? What are you guys waiting for? But anyway, they can't waste 2024 because you know 25 is going to be a nightmare. That doesn't mean you just say, well, we start rebuilding now and maybe you're okay in 26. You still have, even with the guys you're going to lose this year, whether they graduate or they hit the portal, there's still enough talent combined with the incoming class, assuming at least some of the big guys stick around, that you can still have a good year next year. And also with whoever's coming in, you now maybe don't have those great expectations that Babers has had the last couple of years that he's fallen short of. So without that pressure, you could surprise a lot of people.
And not only that, you're throwing in, for all those schedules moving forward, having to play just one of Clemson or FSU in the same season. You don't have to like double up and play both, which is always a nightmare. I think the only really big schedule thing down the road is honestly just still having Notre Dame on the books and then having Penn State on the books like in those later years. But like for the most part, like the schedule, especially in 24, like you did a whole breakdown, and there's only like four or five teams at absolute best that's like, okay, historically this team should win. Other than that, they're all pretty much toss-ups or historically favor Syracuse, or Syracuse from a talent perspective is about the same. So like there's a really good outlook for next year, which I think again is going to make this search really just kind of intriguing of how fast that the retool we'll call it will be.
Now, to kind of wrap this all up, Andy, given your experience this weekend, are you still going to go back to Atlanta in 2025?
Oh, I'm already going back for both games in 2025. That's been decided. Because, yeah, remember, we're going to Atlanta twice in 2025.
And the schedule makers have a really funny opportunity to make that Georgia Tech game the second game of the season.
They won't.
It's going to be.
They will not, but it'll be really, really funny.
Honestly, it's probably going to be this week again. It's really because this week is SoCon Saturday across, and Georgia Tech really knows what's going to happen when they play Georgia. They like this game to be their last, you know, chant. Like, again, they were, I will say this, Georgia Tech hyped to make a bowl game, man. They were really into what happened this season and being 6-5. Like, they're going to be very happy to be 6-6.
That's because Georgia Tech just went through their own Greg Robinson phase.
Yes, exactly. And it's there. But yeah, I think it's going to happen quick. I'm going to go back to Atlanta again. Just a reminder for everybody, transfer portal opens on December 4th. So yeah, we should probably make a decision before that.
Yeah. That's if you're going to do this when you do it, you need to have somebody in place so that you minimize jumping ship, but also can maximize people coming the other way when the portal opens.
When did John Wildhack call Tony White /Tony White's agent? Was it earlier this month? Yeah. Okay, good. That's what I thought.
Definitely 2 weeks ago.
If there was any inkling that, that this was going to go down, he should have been on the phone.
What are the odds right now on Connor Stallions becoming a Syracuse head coach? I couldn't say that seriously.
Stop it. Stop
no.
it.
No.
You can bring Mike Hart in on the staff.
No, oh, you missed that part, Steve.
We did discuss that, yeah.
No, again, as I said when I joined,
I mean,
this is why we can't have nice things.
Technically speaking, Dom and I are open to be grad assistants next year.
No.
We can help out where we can.
Can confirm. I have 0 years of eligibility left, and also no knees or back or ankles or shoulders.
I am also
out. Oh, so you'd be just as effective as the right side of the offensive line.
Pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Can't wait to see that. I feel like this is a good place to just end this before we get into a dark place.
Before we stumble into more degeneracy, yes, at Sickos Committee.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the S is for Sickos now.
I was saying the Sickos have been loving it. They've been loving it lately.
You know, we were wondering about off-season content, especially with like James doing the basketball stuff, so we don't have to touch on that as hard.
I don't think we're going to have that problem.
Yeah, we're not going to have to worry about this now.
Oh, boy.
Trying to look at the right things here, guys.
No, we can talk about football for a lot, which is a great thing. I'm very excited about this.
Let's just all avoid the state of New Hampshire.
Yeah, you had to get the other football in there somewhere.
All right. That is it.
That's our brand, okay? Hashtag brand.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was disappointing. For anyone who doesn't know what Christian's talking about, what was it, 3-0?
Yeah, it was 3-0,
yeah.
So Syracuse is officially done with their 2023 soccer campaign. Right as it felt like they were kind of finding themselves getting knocked out of the NCAA tournament 3-0 at New Hampshire. I did not get to watch the game. I was working a Comic-Con for my buddy, which was fun in its own right, but did not allow me to see either the Georgia Tech mess or the game today. So, yeah.
And you're better off for it.
Yeah, I think it worked out better in both cases.
I saw about 30 seconds of it because it was 1-0. I turned it on. It immediately became 2-0. And that was the end of the story. So
yep. Sounds about right.
They won the last one.
Andy's been trying
to
end this for the past 3 minutes. Let's end it.
All right. All right.
Yeah,
sorry, Andy.
This is the... No. I just, this is going to be, we're going to have many of these shows. It's going to be a great time.
Disloyal Idiots overtime.
Yeah, exactly. But that is it for the Disloyal Idiots show. Thank you to everybody who watched. Thank you for Dom and Mike for jumping on and joining the crew. As always, make sure that you like and subscribe this episode on your podcast player of choice. It helps us trick the AI into expanding the Ottoman Empire. Thank you for those of you who joined us on Twitch. Over at Twitch Disloyal Idiots. Reminder, we do this pretty much every Sunday at 8, so you can watch along live and get this before anybody else. Thank you to all of our friends over at NudesMagician.com, who, if you're reading this on Nudes Magician or listening to this on Nudes Magician, we really do appreciate their continued support and your continued support reading us over there.
If you are hearing this on the podcast feed of your choice, you will also now be seeing every other podcast or so, a Syracuse basketball podcast. Continue to tune in and listen to that. That is the one and only James Zuba and various guests discussing the state of one Red Autry's team.
I was on the pod on the latest episode, so go check it out.
And by go check it out, I still have to upload it, but I will momentarily.
Oh, I love that. But... cannot wait for what is going to now be the football coaching search show. It is going to be a lot of fun. Cannot wait to talk sauces next week with everybody. Go Orange.
Matt Canada for Syracuse Head Coach 2023.
God help us all. Go Orange.
No. Go Orange.
Go Orange.